Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My next guest, Nancy Giles, is probably best known as a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning these days. She's usually described as a performer and social commentator, and that dual role is on display in her one-woman play, The Accidental Pundette, now in repertory at 59 East 59 Theaters. And you might remember her as PFC Frankie Bunsen on the television series China Beach, or maybe you even remember her from high school in Queens. She joins me now. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show, Nancy Giles.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Jamaica High, which unfortunately now is split between two schools. There's Jamaica High, and then there's, I think, Queens Collegiate Academy. And it's like the Sharks and the Jets. One gets all the stuff, and Jamaica sort of gets screwed.
The title of your play, The Accidental Pundette, you're referring to how you, an actress on China Beach and Delta, came to be debating the co-founder of the St. Louis Tea Party and talked to talk radio host Dana Loesch on Larry King back in 2010 to do this. We're going to play an excerpt in a minute, but do you want to set up how this came about?
Well, working on Sunday Morning, I write about all kinds of things. I mean, the first piece that I did was about, like, the conspiracy of high heels, et cetera. I was just looking for material, and some of the very funny material I get is from politics. And from those essays, I was invited to be on other shows like Hardball and whatnot. And I'd been on Larry King a few times, and this was a few months before he retired. I don't like to think of me, this, what's happening, what you're going to hear is the reason why I was never on the show again. But anyway, it was a talk about whether the Tea Party or the NAACP would be more influential during the 2010 election.
And so as we do, we're going to play a longer than most people play excerpt from this, so people have a little context before the aha moment supposedly comes. So this is about a minute, and it starts with Dana Loesch and some of the crosstalk that's going on before you speak up.
This billboard, maybe it went a little bit too extreme. Maybe it went a little bit too far beyond the bounds of good taste. Stephanie, I'm not done, sweetie. Maybe it went a little bit beyond the bounds of good taste. But the thing is, the Tea Party movement went ahead and they repudiated that. When the NAACP, when Kenneth Gladney was being made fun of at an NAACP-sponsored press conference in St. Louis, and Harold Crumpton, who's on the board of the NAACP, stood by and laughed along as people at that press conference called a black conservative activist or someone affiliated with the Tea Party an Uncle Tom and a Negro, the NAACP didn't condemn that at all. So I think
Let's get Nancy, what do you make of all this?
Well, where is the Tea Party's outrage when members of their own party spit on members of the United States?
That was
States.
True false.
You know
Let's
what?
Not it wasn't in defamation
true false.
And libel.
Excuse me,
that.
I'm talking, so shut your mouth.
Well, be where honest you? When you
Excuse
speak,
me.
And I won't have to interrupt
Excuse
you.
Excuse me, please
be
quiet.
And I won't have to.
Hey, be quiet. Where were
just
you guys when? You know, Larry, can you just turn off our mic? This is ridiculous.
I'll run the show, Nancy. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. The thing that is so disturbing to me about the Tea Party is that their racist attitudes and the elements of the Tea Party.
And we faded out there. That started when you were talking about a billboard that likened Obama to Hitler.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's true. And the fact that the Tea Party never copped to the crappy things they did. There really was someone who spit on, a member of the United States Congress. I mean, it happened. And this woman, Dana Loesch, she just, like a lot of people do on these shows, would not stop talking. So that's no excuse for me saying shut your mouth. That was really kind of all over the top.
And that's, I guess, the part that everybody seized on. and I could tell from your face that you don't look back on that as a shining moment.
No, but it was a turning point because I didn't like saying shut up to somebody. I felt like I was becoming part of the problem and not part of the solution. So when I got a slew of really nasty emails from people, I decided as sort of an experiment to write a few people back and say, you know what, I made a mistake. And what happened after I wrote those letters and the responses is a part of what I love so much about the work that I do. And I talk about it in the show.
And was that an experiment to write back to the angry commenters on your site? Or is it your regular practice to write back to people who take the time to write to you?
It's a funny thing, Brian, because when people write really lovely, glowing things, I read them and I'm like, wow. And then I kind of forget about them. Sometimes I will write back. It's not because I get tons and tons and tons of mail, but just there's not enough time. Really mean emails that I get, some of them are so vile that they're actually scary. And I normally delete them and try not to think about them. But in this case, I felt strongly since I had said – I sounded like Bill O'Reilly, turn off her mic. That's not me. And I thought, no, I was wrong, and I don't like that people don't apologize anymore. So I just wrote a simple response back to people, not lambasting myself horribly, but just saying, you know, I made a mistake. I was sorry I said that, and left it at that. And it was kind of cool.
On this show, as I know you know as a listener, we try to engage listeners with – all kinds of life experiences and opinions. And my experience is that most people just want to be heard and do become less contemptuous, no matter what their starting point is, when you let them speak and take them seriously, even if you disagree with them. Is that what you found?
It's absolutely true. And the problem with social media these days is that you can do all kinds of snarky things. And there's that block. There's the anonymous sense where you're not looking at somebody and where you're you know, you don't have the kind of experience, if you're in the same room with someone, of the kind of social cues that would let you, like you and I are talking right now. You're talking, I'm being quiet, I'm talking. You know, there's not that opportunity to do that with a tweet or something like that. People like Gabby Douglas, the unbelievable,
gymnast?
Yes, that beautiful 16-year-old African-American gold medal winner who broke barriers and set records, had to deal with some black chicks who made snarky remarks about her hair. And the problem is, even if it was just two people who had their own insecurities saying, ooh, she needs to get her hair right, it goes global. So it might as well be a million people saying
it. And that becomes one of the larger themes of your play, whether tools like email and Facebook and Twitter are forces of good or evil.
Exactly. And it's funny that you put it that way, because I do start the show these days saying it like one of those superheroes would say as he's killed a villain, too bad that his powers were used for good instead for evil instead of good, you know. And I'm confounded by whether Facebook and Twitter and email and cell phones and texts and stuff are really connectors or more blockage, or as a former shrink used to say, tools for passive-aggressive behavior. Mm.
We just took calls from listeners about how something that happened in their personal lives affected their politics. And I want to hear yours, but you open your one-woman play, Accidental Pundit, with a story of how the Black Panthers made you see one of your favorite fictional characters in a new light, Nancy Drew.
It's true. When I was about, I think, 9 years old, there was a camp in our neighborhood. It turned out that it was a free camp, and it was within walking distance. And it was run by a real nationalistic group of black people. I mean, I say Black Panthers. It might have been an outgrowth, but it was like a junior camp. And we learned these songs and kind of got in touch with our inner passionate, like, children warriors. And when I went back to my Nancy Drew books that summer, I started seeing all these interesting characters that I'd never noticed before, colorful characters. I don't want to give everything away, but it certainly gave a twist to what was before that one of my favorite pastimes.
Were your parents political, or was it just in the air at the time?
My parents were political with us in the sense of, we are in control of you. You have to do what we say. But we went to that camp not because of politics, but because it was free and it was within walking distance.
And when I heard about that story, it made me wonder about what they used to call consciousness raising in the 60s and
yes.
70s. And we don't use those words for aha moments today. I'm
right.
Sure Nancy Drew stories have been updated many times to remove offensive passengers.
But you know what?
Passages.
In a way, though, that would be wrong. That would almost be like going back in Mark Twain's and Huckleberry Finn and removing, quote, the N-word. That's how people wrote. That's how people perceive things. Don't try to whitewash it. Leave it alone.
And your most recent CBS Sunday Morning Commentary was, and maybe some of the listeners saw it and didn't realize this is who we're talking to right now on the radio, taking the haters on Twitter to task over the Gabby Douglas thing.
Yeah, it started with that, and it was actually part of a bigger piece just about hair, women and hair, and myself as a black woman and the kind of hair consciousness raising that's gone on over the past 30 years.
So you want to do your That's My Issue moment for us? Anything from your personal experience that shaped your politics?
Well, I This is what's been on my mind the most these days. It has to do with the whole voting rights stuff and that votes are trying to be voting is trying to be disenfranchised in different parts of the country. It's a very important thing to me. I remember my first presidential election, which was 1980, and I voted for Jimmy Carter. But the real reason I voted for Jimmy Carter had less to do with his politics than the fact that, well, we're Democrats, and he reminded me of Mr. Rogers. And I always loved Mr. Rogers, such a kindly, sort of sweet guy. But that was a moment when just the action of going into the voting booth in Queens with my little voter registration card, no picture, but my name typewritten, it had such a powerful impact on me that I'm so upset by what's going on in different parts of the country. I'm about 50% of the way toward organizing a few friends, driving out to Ohio with our own money, helping people pay for whatever documentation they need to get those photo IDs, because although I want the laws overturned, I will choke if I think of people that can't get the stuff in time and can't vote.
You were critical of the Republicans during the primary debates. Are you looking forward to the Romney-Obama debates?
I sure am. I absolutely am. Literally, if President Obama takes Romney at his word, quote unquote, the guy's going to be running in circles because he changes his word. You know, as often – well, I was going to say as often as he changes his tie, but he doesn't really change his clothes that much. It's always that same sort of, you know, crisp white shirt, iron jean kind of, you know, White Temple nausea thing.
Do you think – well, now we know how Nancy Giles reacts to Mitt Romney's look.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll do a Todd Akin commentary, or is that too easy?
Do you think I will? You're asking me?
You.
I don't think I could handle the absurdity of what he said with any kind of humor, because it just makes me so angry. And one of the things I love about the work I do on CBS is that I try to do things with a light hand, like use something funny to make my point. Right now, it's blinding rage when it comes to what he said. It's just – it's idiocy, and that there are other people that vote for him. I literally look at the platforms where he's standing, and I look at every woman, and I go, why are you there? Why are you there?
It gets very difficult in election season sometimes to keep a lighthearted stance toward the world. By the way, Amy – we're out of time, but Amy from Manhattan writes, instead of saying shut up, try something like, interrupting doesn't make you right.
See, where was Amy? My mind didn't go that way. It went right to the childish, stop it, shut up.
You needed virtual Amy in your brain.
Thanks,
at that
Amy.
Moment on Larry King. The Accidental Pundette is part of the summer short series at 59 East 59 Theaters. You can still catch performances through the 29th of August. We have a link to the theater on our website, and you can follow Nancy Giles on Twitter at Nancy Giles NYC, as well as see her on CBS Sunday Morning. Great to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
You too. It was wonderful.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.